One day, he gets out of bed, just like you and me. He thinks about his proud mother, his brothers and sisters. He steps outside and feels the cool morning breeze on his face. Mingling with the jostling masses of people trying to get to work, he might even stop for a cup of coffee. But this man's backpack carries something dangerously different than work papers or lunch. He steps into a public square, looks around, and pushes the button. A suicide bomber. Today, we're going to discuss the core issues of the Middle East conflict, what motivates a suicide bomber, and get the insight of a number of Christians who have actually lived in the Middle East. On Beyond Today, we're going to search for the answers to solving the Israel-Arab conflict.
Join our host, Gary Petty, and his guests as they help you understand your future on Beyond Today.
The concept of a suicide bomber seems unfathomable to most people living in the cultures of the United States, Canada, or Europe. I mean, what motivates a man to strap explosives on his body, walk among a group of people he doesn't even know, and detonate a bomb, killing and mangling others while snuffing out his own life? Is it an act of madness, desperation, hatred, religious fervor? Where do we go to understand the root cause, the reason why there is this terrible strife between Muslim, Jew, and Christian? Can the root cause of the strife in the Middle East be traced back to 1948, when the United Nations established the modern nation of Israel? In this rather simplistic view, the UN forced the indigenous population, the Palestinians, out of their homes and replaced them with Jews, who were survivors of the Nazi Holocaust. The displaced Palestinians are seen as the abused people who have been stripped of their lands and rights. The reality is much more complicated. In fact, a little later in the program, we're going to talk with some individuals who have lived in the Middle East. It will help you understand just how complicated it really is. The cause of the suffering and strife in the Middle East started long before 1948. So did all this trouble start when the European powers arbitrarily divided Arab lands after the fall of the Ottoman Empire? Can we trace the beginnings of modern conflicts between Islam and Christians to the medieval Crusades? Is the blame to be laid on the Zionist movement, which reflected centuries of Jewish desire to return to their homeland after the Romans drove them out in the 1st and 2nd centuries AD? These are all important factors in understanding the long, bloody, complicated history of the conflicts between Arabs, Jews, and Christians. But the roots of the conflict, of this conflict in the Middle East, predates the Crusades. In fact, these roots predate the founding of Islam and Christianity. They predate Arab tribes supporting the ancient Babylonians against the nation of Judah. They predate Moses leading the Israelites out of Egyptian slavery. The root causes of squalid Palestinian camps, suicide bombers, the Jewish desire for a homeland in Zion, the Christian belief that Jesus is the prophesied Messiah who will return to Jerusalem in power and glory, all have an ancient beginning. The root causes of Middle Eastern bloodshed originate in a story shared by Jews, Christians, and Muslims, a story that happened around 4,000 years ago. According to Genesis, the first book of the Hebrew Scriptures, in a prominent city named Ur, along the Euphrates River, located in what is now modern Iraq, a man who would be known throughout history as Abraham and his wife Sarah were called by God. God told them to leave their home and travel to a place where he would give them a rich land, and through one of their descendants, he would bless all the nations of the earth. Abraham and Sarah obeyed God and traveled from Ur to what is known as Canaan. Canaan is the geographically diverse strip of land running along the eastern Mediterranean Sea that is the center of the Israeli-Arab conflict today. God promised Abraham and Sarah a child, but she was barren. And when she became advanced in age, they both knew that it was physically impossible for them to produce a child. The couple decided that they had the perfect solution to the problem. Following a common ancient custom, Sarah gave an Egyptian servant girl to Abraham as a surrogate mother. The child of this union was named Ishmael. For many years, Abraham thought Ishmael was the son of promise. But Abraham and Sarah We're about to learn a shocking lesson. God appeared to Abraham and claimed that Ishmael was not the son of promise. The son of promise would miraculously be produced from a union between Abraham and Sarah. Abraham already had a son whom he dearly loved. He pleads to God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." You can almost hear in Abraham's voice the agony of a man who is realizing the disappointment and betrayal his son is going to feel. Abraham had believed for many years that Ishmael was the son of promise, but God informed him that the sovereign Lord of history had other plans. It was always God's plan for the son of promise to come from Abraham and Sarah. The use of the Egyptian Hagar as a surrogate was their devising, not God's. What an important lesson for all of us. How many times do we make decisions based on our own idea of God's will, while in reality, he has a totally different plan for us? Abraham and Sarah tried to fulfill God's promise by human reasoning on a human timetable. The consequences of their simple decision shaped the history of many generations. According to Genesis, just as God had promised, Abraham and Sarah did have a son. His name was Isaac. Isaac became the father of the ancient Israelites, the forefathers of the Jewish people. The Jews traced their origins to what they call the fathers, Abraham, his son Isaac, and his son Jacob, who became known as Israel. The story of Abraham, Sarah, Ishmael, and Isaac is also foundational for Christians who see in Jesus of Nazareth the prophesied Jewish Messiah. It is through Jesus that God is fulfilling the promise he gave to Abraham to bless all nations, all peoples. Let's return to the Genesis account. In order to avoid strife between Ishmael and Isaac, the child who was now proclaimed the son of promise, the son of Abraham and Hagar was driven from Abraham's camp, where he became the father of many tribes. According to Muslim tradition, the origins of the Arab peoples are traced through Abraham and Ishmael. By understanding the two versions of this ancient story, we begin to understand why there is such strife between Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, who all trace their origins to God's dealings with Abraham and Sarah. In the Quran, it asks Jews and Christians, "Wherefore do you argue respecting Abraham, asserting that he was of your religion, when the Pentateuch and Gospel are not set down but after him a long time?" Muslims believe that their religion is the true religion of Abraham and predates both Moses and Jesus. Jews believe that the promises given to Abraham were passed on through Isaac and Jacob. For them, when God on Mount Sinai gave the law to Moses, he was fulfilling those promises. Christians believe that the promises God gave to Abraham were passed on through Isaac, Jacob, and Moses, and Jesus as the prophesied Messiah and Son of God. The wars, the bloodshed, the hatreds, the misunderstandings are all human attempts to grasp and own the promises God made to Abraham. It is truly a 4,000-year-old tragedy. So how is this tragedy being played out in our world today? Well, we're going to discuss this question with some Christians who have lived in the Middle East. But first, let me tell you how to get your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. You know, the most important information you'll ever receive in understanding the conflict between Jews and Arabs, finding an answer to why the terrorists hate us, and discovering the biblical solution to this 4,000-year-old tragedy is found in The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. This booklet will guide you through the history of the son of Abraham, the rise and fall of ancient Israel, the formation of Islam, and what Bible prophecy says about the future of war and peace in the Middle East and its impact on your world. You can receive a free copy by calling toll-free 1-888-886-8632. That's 1-888-886-8632. Or you can read The Middle East in Bible Prophecy online at beyondtoday.tv. We also offer this important book in Arabic. Now, all of our literature is provided free as a public service, and you can follow Beyond Today on Twitter and join us on Facebook, where we welcome your comments and suggestions. We're going to take you to San Antonio, Texas, where I had a fascinating discussion with three Christians, William and Jackie Stetter and Rod Foster, who have a unique perspective of the Middle East. All three lived in Jordan, and because of their work in an international foundation, they were able to interact with all levels of Jordanian society, from Bedouins and Palestinians to government officials and even members of the royal family. We discussed how the story of Abraham lies at the foundation of conflicts between Jews and Arabs.
Through Abraham, God gave certain promises that came through Isaac. The Jews believe that also. But the Arabs have quite a different viewpoint of how God blessed Abraham and where those blessings go to, correct?
Correct. Obviously, they're coming from a different book. There's a different story as far as the history of God's promises and even the patriarchs of their faith. They see, instead of Isaac being on Mount Moriah for sacrificing by Abraham, they see Ishmael. Mm-hmm. They also know that Ishmael was also circumcised, and that the story is reversed. There's an imposter, and that imposter is Isaac.
It makes it completely incompatible. There's no way that both of those stories can be compatible with each other. It's either that one is right and one is wrong, or neither one is correct. But there is no way for those two stories to mesh with each other, because they are just absolutely opposite of each other, even though it's the same characters in the story.
I really want to make that point, because that's a very, very important point. I have here a copy of the Jewish Scriptures, what we call the Old Testament. Here is the Bible, the Old and New Testament, what Christians use. Here's a copy of the Quran. What we literally have are people that are people of three books: the Quran, the Tanakh, and the Bible, the Old and New Testament combined. So if you're an Arab and you believe that, and especially let's look at Palestinians, if you believe that that land was given to you by God and you're not able to have that land, how does that affect you?
I can give you one specific example. A grown man, much larger than me, who appeared not to have been born in that land, in the West Bank, parts of Israel, break down emotionally. I don't mean in a violent way, but emotional, as if he had lost a loved one, because his ancestral land and the property were gone. They were now occupied by the nation of Israel. And he behaved as if he had lost a loved one just when I asked him, where does your family come from? Mm-hmm. And I, many times when I'd ask people, where do you come from, they won't tell me the city or the suburb they're from. They'll tell me the specific cities and areas within the West Bank and the Palestinian area of which their family came from. And it's a very emotional issue.
How does the Quran shape their worldview?
Well, what was somewhat surprising to me was that they view our culture as being somewhat barbaric. We're sort of the uneducated, unwashed, and we just got lucky or something. You know, we got the wealth and the power in the past century or so, but their view of us is we're pretty an uneducated, uninformed people. I mean, we keep dogs in our house, which to them is just absolutely filthy. The average Jordanian or Palestinian on the street is much more informed about, you know, the world politics and what is going on in the world than the average American is.
I think most Americans would find that very strange and surprising to say that they understand more about world politics than we do, as far as the average person.
Yeah, you know, the average American would. We see images on the news of people in keffiyehs covering their masks, throwing rocks, and that's our image. That's not it at all. They're very informed. They're very community-oriented. So they watch the news, they read the news, and they sit around and they discuss it. And that is their life.
Now, Jackie, what was it like being a Christian American woman in that culture, in that society?
It was very different. And we come from a country where women have power. We have a lot of individual power away from our families. And over there, it's the role of a woman is much more submissive. You're much more in the background. Some of your more educated women that have spent time in America may still have some of that power and not so submissive, but your main...
Just average person?
Average person. The woman's role is within the home. It's as the wife and the mother and the caregiver for that family, and it's a much more submissive role. And I know when I came back to the U.S., it took me a while to readapt to the U.S. culture and the fact that it was okay for me to go out and to talk to a man, to shake hands when you meet someone, that the culture shock of coming to the U.S. again was really something.
Are many of the Muslim women educated? Are they allowed to receive the same education as men?
The wealthier ones are allowed to have more education. They have an opportunity to some private schools. You're more middle of the road, you're lower income, not so much, because the kids are needed to help take care of the farms, the animals, that type. So there, especially for the girls, the education is cut off a little earlier.
You know, we were talking about beforehand, and one thing you were saying, all of you were saying, was that how passionate they are as a people. And we don't understand, you know, in the United States, we don't tend to be that emotional, but they are very passionate people, aren't they?
Definitely. Emotion is not held in check there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's pros and cons to that, but you did not feel that there was a mask or a political correctness. If they felt a certain way, they told you that, and you felt the heart was there. Mm-hmm. Whether it was politics or a family, they were endearing people, but they could easily, as much as rejoice, be very angry. And it was right in front and center.
Of course, the downside to that is that emotion became very volatile, even violent, very quickly.
Immediately.
You were talking about a riot you were witnessed, I guess, at one time?
We didn't witness it because we were in hiding. We heard it. What had happened is that over in Israel proper, some Palestinian workers were coming in for their day's work into the country, and apparently an Israeli citizen out of the blue just murdered several of them. It sent the Palestinian refugees who were in Jordan into a massive riot, an immediate riot. It was an uproar. They hit the streets. Machine guns were firing through the air. We heard all of these, you know, terrible sounds. Helicopters were flying over. Jet planes were flying over. We weren't allowed to leave our apartments. If we had to leave, we had to put full keffiyehs over, not show the colors of our eyes, keep our eyes down, never speak to anyone, because even if we spoke in Arabic, it would be obvious that we were Westerners. So we just had to stay in hiding. But the amazing thing is, as fast as it erupted, it went away. Within, you know, a week, we were back at work, things were a little chilly. A week later, it was as if it never happened. And that's their passion. They're passionate about everything, but they get over it.
Until leaders in the Western world understand how to deal with that, we will simply fuel that all the time. I want to go back to something that Ra was talking about they see people in the Western world as barbaric. I know they also see people in the Western world as immoral. How did that affect you as a woman over there? Were you treated different? How did you have to act?
We were treated differently, and the group that we were with, the volunteer organization, we were admonished before going over to make sure that we always dressed modestly. You know, if we wore a skirt, it must be a long skirt. Our shirts must cover us at least to the elbows, no, you know, deep necklines or anything like that. Always dress modestly, because regardless of how we looked, their perception is what they usually saw on television of American women, and so often it was a portrayal of loose, immoral women. So that is their first impression. And the Arab men would brush up against us in the marketplace. We generally would not go out alone. As women in our group, we would not go alone. We always had to have it at minimum two women and one male escort, so that there was never any indication that there was anything improper, that we always, not necessarily protection, but it was just an escort, something, you know, someone to look out for us.
We'll return to our discussion in a moment, but first let me tell you about today's special offer. When you order your free copy of the Middle East and Bible Prophecy, we'll also send you a free subscription to the Good News Magazine. This important magazine will help you make sense of world headlines, discover the secrets to successful living, and understand what the Bible is really all about. To receive your free subscription to the Good News, call toll-free 888-886-8632. That's 1-888-886-8632. Or go online to beyondtoday.tv, where you can read the booklet, The Middle East and Prophecy, and watch other Beyond Today programs on prophecy, marriage, secrets to managing your finances, and discovering God's plan for you. You can also follow Beyond Today on Twitter and join us on Facebook, where we welcome your comments and suggestions. Well, we still have a lot to cover in discussing the root causes of the Jewish-Islam-Christian conflict. First, let's return to a question I asked Rod Foster that can help us understand the motivation of suicide bombers.
In your conversations with them, what did you find were, you know, they saw in discussions, differences between Islam and Christianity?
Well, I had a conversation with a man who was a graduate of Harvard Law School. He was the king's political advisor. And, you know, at a minimum, I would say he was a brilliant man. And he knew our culture, the American culture, very, very well. And he made an interesting comment one day we were having dinner at his house. And he told us that the main difference between the way the Western mind thinks and the way the Middle Eastern mind thinks is that in Christianity, we think only on guilt or innocence. And that's the way we determine our behavior, is based on whether it is guilty, if we're guilty or innocent. And it's not that way in the Middle East. The way they think is, does it bring shame or honor? In fact, the highest sin in Islam is haram, which is shame of God, God being ashamed of you. So if you understand that point of view, we look at an action, and we look at the action by law, if it is guilty or innocent, if it's right or wrong. They look at an action, does it bring honor or does it bring shame? So we oftentimes get confused. How could they do these horrible suicide bombings where they basically they massacre women and children, little babies, and then they dance in the streets? Well, to them, it's bringing honor. To them, even though I think it's a terrible thing, you know, to them, we're destroying the infidel and going to paradise, and they've brought honor to their family.
We are people of two different books, and they believe that Christians and Jews are stealing something that God has given to them. God has given and made some promises through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And those promises not only extend out to Christians, but they actually extend to those people also in the life, death, resurrection, and work of Jesus Christ. That's the message that we need to share. That's the message we want to share. But we can't until we first understand them and where they're coming from. I thank all of you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Understanding the importance of honor and shame is vital in understanding what motivates suicide bombers. The Stetters and Rod Foster repeatedly told me how much they learned to love the Jordanians and Palestinians they met. All three talked about the hospitality and affection the people of Jordan showed them. After William and Jackie returned to the United States, they were married and named their first daughter Jordan. They found a connection with those people, yet they were separated by the interpretation of the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Ishmael. So what is the solution to the Jewish-Arab-Christian conflict? Well, we can conclude that we are all just simply people of different books. The Jews, well, they follow the Tanakh, what we call the Old Testament. Christians, well, we tend to follow the Old and New Testaments, the Bible, and see Jesus as the prophesied Jewish Messiah. The Muslims, well, they believe in the Quran. But even that is a simplistic viewpoint, because many Christians have different interpretations of the Bible. In October 2010, a Catholic Senate of Bishops for the Middle East claimed that it was inappropriate to use the Bible as support for the return of Jews to Israel. Bishop Boustros of Boston issued this statement: "For us Christians, you can no longer speak of a land promised to the Jewish people. For this group of Catholic leaders, the promises God made to Abraham's physical descendants were negated by Jesus Christ. There's no denying that God wants to save all people. He wants everyone to become his child, regardless of race or nationality. Jesus Christ, who is the Messiah prophesied in the Tanakh, is God's messenger for everyone. The New Testament proclaims that anyone who responds to Jesus' message becomes the spiritual descendant of Abraham. But this doesn't mean, as Bishop Boustros claims, that God no longer has any intention to carry out his promises made to the physical descendants of Abraham. The Apostle Paul wrote, "Who are Israelites? To whom pertain the adoption, the glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, the service of God, and the promises? Of whom are the fathers, and from whom, according to the flesh, Christ came." The Old Testament contains scores of promises from God that when the Messiah sets up his kingdom on this earth, he will restore the physical descendants of Israel to the land God promised Abraham. On Beyond Today, we are people of a book, the Bible. We proclaim that there is a Messiah coming to this earth, not the Messiah of the Quran, not a Messiah who denies the promises God made to Abraham. This Messiah, as prophesied in the Old Testament, came the first time, as the New Testament claims, as a Jewish itinerant preacher who died for the sins of all humanity and is returning to solve the world's problems. Jesus Christ is returning for all people, Jew, Arab, European, African, Asian, Latino. He is the only solution to the problems of the Middle East, because he is the ultimate fulfillment of God's promises made to Abraham, the descendant through whom all nations will be blessed. Now, I want to remind you about today's free offer, the Middle East and Bible Prophecy, and the Good News Magazine. To get your free copy, call toll-free 1-888-886-8632. Or go to beyondtoday.tv, where you can read the booklet, The Middle East and Bible Prophecy, and watch other Beyond Today programs. You can follow Beyond Today on Twitter, and join us on Facebook, where we welcome your comments and suggestions. The biblical solution to the conflicts of the Middle East, they're as controversial as the problems. One Messiah for Jew, Arab, and Christian. It is ironic that neither Jews nor Arabs recognize Jesus as the Messiah. It is also ironic that many Christians don't know the real Jesus or what he actually taught. Many don't even anticipate his return. On Beyond Today, we proclaim the biblical Messiah, the only hope for every Jew, Arab, and Christian, and the rest of humanity. Join us right here every week as we proclaim the coming Messiah and his kingdom, and what that means for your life right now. And thanks for watching.
For the free literature offered on today's program, go online to beyondtoday.tv. Please join us again next week on Beyond Today.